The mission is simple: to help high achievers naturally eliminate emotional and physical obstacles so they can optimize their life for higher achievement. Welcome. You have just entered the Genesis Zone.
Good day and welcome to the Genesis Zone Show. This is Dr. Brian Brown. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us today. With so many things competing for our time and attention, it's hard to determine what's robbing us of our precious energy that we have designated for each day. What are you to do about this robbing of your energy? Today, in today's shows, we're going to be talking about that. We're going to be exploring the answer to that and hopefully be giving you some solutions for overcoming these energy robbers. You know, over the past week or so, I've had intimate firsthand experience with today's topic of energy robbers. You know, energy robbers come in many forms. And with that, I'd like to thank you for being patient last week as I was unable to do the live show last Thursday due to my father passing away unexpectedly. I needed to be with my family during that time, and that's exactly where I was. That's where I was needed. And I was glad to be there. It was a tough time. We're working through it each and every day. My parents were married 54 years. My dad was 74. He was young and had a recent change in one of his cardiac medications. And I'm a firm believer that's quite frankly what happened. But anyway, back to today's topic. You know, it's so easy to forget with all the chaos going on in the world around us right now that real life is happening before our very eyes. So thank you again for your patience. We're going to be talking today about things that rob us of our precious energy. One of the things that comes to mind is stress and sleeplessness and things like that. But what I want to do first, I want to tell you a theory that I have. And it's just from clinical experience, things that I've seen through the years. Now, imagine a coin, if you will. On one side is heads, on the other side is tails. But in this particular instance, we'll say that heads is this process, this physiological process in the body whereby we have this overproduction of fight or flight chemicals. Okay, so we're in this constant fight or flight mode on this one side of the coin. On the other side of the coin is this dopamine response that occurs neurochemically. So we've got one that's adrenal, which is kind of attached to your kidneys. The adrenal glands sit on top of your kidneys, and they produce these fight or flight hormones. Now, fight or flight hormones were never meant to be released on a continuous basis like they are today. I mean, there are a lot of people under continuous chronic stress, and they're constantly in this fight or flight mode. So they're constantly living on this side of the coin with this fight or flight response. But on the flip side of that, there are people that are living in this constant dopamine surge state all the time. And I'm going to get into more details about these here in just a second. But in this dopamine state, dopamine is also one of those chemicals that was never meant to be released continuously over and over and over again. In fact, if you look at the rudimentary aspects of dopamine, dopamine was there as a survival neurotransmitter. For example, when you ate a food that was really good and your body knew that when you were foraging in the wilderness, you found a food that was like, oh man, it stimulated dopamine and it drove you to come back to find that food more frequently because that food was good for your body. When you have sex and you procreate the species, you release high amounts of dopamine. So dopamine was there at its rudimentary level to further the species and feed the species. Okay. So, but it was never meant to be released over and over and over and over again. And we're going to get into some of that here in just a second. Now, I'm going to go into some statistics. So, fair warning here, I don't normally do statistically heavy intros, but I think it's really important to wrap our heads around how significant stress is as an energy robber to us as human beings at this point. You know, individuals are feeling more and more stressed now than they ever have been, with lack of sleep, work pressure, and even, dare I say, social media pressure that we're exposed to on a continuous basis. If you look at the statistics, nearly 8 in 10 adults, that's around, actually, the actual number is 78%, say that there is some source of significant stress in their life. And 2 in 3 adults, around 67%, say that the stress that they experience is increasing, not decreasing. Now, nearly half of adults report that their stress has impacted both their health and their relationships, with about 21% of those, that 49%, 21% of those complaining of true physical complaints, about 20% complaining of some type of behavior change, like snapping at loved ones, and about 20% having unpredicted mood swings, and about 70% having some type of behavior change toward a family member or significant other. Most people, when they're asked in these surveys, they blame lack of sleep, trying to juggle too many things on their plate at one time, work pressure and social pressure as the reason for their stress. So what does stress look like when it's left unchecked and we're in this constant fight or flight response? Well, ongoing stress elevates adrenaline. And physiologically, when adrenaline gets elevated, so does cortisol. Now, we also have this negative connotation with cortisol. It's like, that's the fat hormone. That's what makes you fat. Yeah. So if cortisol is in high amounts for too long a period of time, you develop central obesity. You develop these fat deposits, both internally and externally, around the middle of your body and on your hips. So that's one of the negative effects of ongoing chronic stress. Lack of productivity is another effect. Immune compromise, loss of lean muscle mass, poor bone metabolism. In other words, your bones actually become more brittle over time when you're under chronic stress. And actual decline in cognitive functioning also occurs when you're under chronic stress. So, being in this constant state on this side of the coin, where we're in this fight or flight response all the time, is not healthy at all. So let's look at the dopamine side of the coin and see if it's any better. The dopamine side of the coin is really, really interesting, because then we have to ask ourselves, like, where are we getting this hyperstimulation of dopamine? I want to start out with an article here. And this was an article that just got published here not too long ago, just recently, in the Harvard University graduate school newsletter. The vice president, or former vice president, of user growth at Facebook was speaking in front of a group of Stanford University students. And he was asked the question about exploiting consumer behavior and dopamine addiction. And his quote is, and I quote, and this is from Chamath, I can't pronounce his last name, Pilihapitiya. Don't even ask me how to spell that. But I feel tremendous guilt, he says. The short-term dopamine-driven feedback loops that we have created are destroying how societies work. And it's unbelievable, unfathomable how impactful that quote right there is. And it's, I think, why we're seeing in the news and in the media just in the past couple of weeks, the tidal wave of kickback that's coming against programs like InstaKids. If you're not aware what that is, Instagram was really going to be marketing to kids down to as early as age 7 and age 5. And there was this huge kickback on this based on what Chamath was saying here about dopamine addiction and what we realized that we were actually doing, and we capitalized on it. And so it's really interesting that they knew that this was going on. They knew that they were creating this dopamine addiction, yet they pursued it even further. And even more interesting is just the social dynamics of this all. So having practiced psychiatry for going on 24 years now, I've seen this interesting shift in anxiety around technology. For example, if a person misplaces their phone, they can almost go into a mild state of panic because they misplaced their phone. And clinicians, researchers are actually looking at this as a type of disorder, because when you do surveys, about 73% of people who have smartphones claim to experience some mild form of anxiety or panic when they've misplaced their phone. Isn't that crazy? It's crazy. It seems crazy to me. I mean, I didn't grow up with this technology in my hand, so it's fairly new as far as technology goes for me, but there are generations that have grown up with this in their hand. And when you look at the average adult spends about 2 to 4 hours per day tapping, not 2 to 4 hours a day on their phone looking, 2 to 4 hours a day tapping. And it constitutes about 2,600 taps or touches on their phone on a daily basis. Now, when you look at humans having adapted and evolved into social beings, the average human has about 150 individuals that are in their circle of influence. However, since the advent of, you know, technology with smartphones and things like that, that now moves from about 150 to a potential magnitude of 2 billion potential contacts. Now, you're not gonna necessarily contact all those people yourself, but we only have to look at a video that goes viral and it goes into the hundreds of millions of views rapidly to see that the impact that one person can have is huge. And then we have to ask from a social science standpoint, what is this doing to the human psyche? What is this doing to the human brain? What is this doing to stress levels? What is this doing to dopamine levels? Are we creating fight or flight responses? Are we creating these anxious states and panic disorders? Are we creating this perfect atmosphere for loss of productivity and low energy? Well, I don't know. Let's look at the statistics. So based on the most current survey that I could find, which was dated in 2018, where they surveyed people between the ages of 18 and 29, 44% of that age group uses an energy drink on a daily basis. Now, you may be thinking, oh, well, that's not so bad. Well, you know, it is kind of, because it's just chemical soup. And I'm going to explain to you the disconnect here in just a second. This same age group was polled by a different company later that year. So in the same year, 2018, same age group, 18 to 29 year olds. And what they found was that those people in that age range that were in the workforce, 50% of those workers reported that they find themselves less engaged at work due to work stress and inner office distraction. Now, a totally separate survey across all age spans among workers in the workplace found that 41% of workers in general say that stress has caused them to drop in work productivity. So then we have to ask, you know, why is this happening? Why is this phenomenon happening? So we look more specifically at productivity research, and we find that 70% of workers, no matter what age they are, admit that they feel distracted when they're at their jobs. 16% admit that they are almost always distracted, and over 50% report high levels of work overload and stress linked to answering emails and attending unproductive meetings. And that's an interesting statistic right there, because I'm thinking, well, wait a minute. If your job responsibility is to answer emails and attend quote unquote unproductive meetings, then that's your job responsibility. So where is this disconnect? Because people used to just do their job and that was it. But that was pre-technology, I believe. And I think what's happened, if you know, having practiced psychiatry for 24 years, we've understood brain chemistry when it comes to addiction for a long, long, long time. For example, if a person uses opiates, if they use amphetamines, if they use cocaine, we know from PET scans that the dopamine centers of the brain just light up like a Christmas tree when a person first starts using. But we also understand that over time, when they're constantly exposed to this drug, the dopamine centers actually become dull. They don't light up like they used to with those earlier exposures to those chemicals. Now, the most interesting thing is that when we look at technology, when we look at smartphones, when we look at the dopamine release that occurs with being on your phone all the time, with getting a like, with getting a share, with getting somebody commenting on one of your posts, we get the same dopamine surge as if we were using cocaine. It's crazy. And what happens over time when we are constantly exposed to those dopamine spikes, we also see the same dulling as if they were a chronic drug user. So the correlations there are almost identical between substance abuse and overexposure to social media. So I think as adults, we can make our own decisions. You know, it's your choice. If you want to expose yourself that way, that's perfectly fine. But I think we really need to ask the question, why are we exposing our children to this? What are we doing to our children's developing brains? Because they're developing brains. And research shows in addiction that if you expose a child as early as age, you know, well, at any age, but the earlier you that expose them to a particular drug, and I'm actually including social media and technology as part of those drugs, the earlier you expose that brain to those drugs, the more likely they are to be have a long-term addiction and dependence upon that drug. In other words, what it does is it rewires the brain chemistry so that the brain chemistry becomes dependent upon that. So just as a little side note, and I thought this was an interesting statistic somewhat related, is that an estimated 75 to 90% of people who visit their primary care medical providers are there because of chronic stress. Whether it be physical stress or emotional stress, they're there because of stress. And it's because more and more people are living in this fight or flight mode, but more and more people are also hyper-exposing themselves to dopamine. Again, one coin, two different sides, and very similar responses that we can see through this these types of issues. So let's look specifically again at this younger age population, this 18 to 29. And I'm not beating up on the 18, 29, you know, year old age group. I'm just showing you what statistics say, because this is the generation that has grown up with this technology in their hand. That's why I think it's really a ripe population to be studying, to understand what the responses are to our brain chemistry. So when we look specifically at millennials and Gen Z population, 74% report that they are distracted all the time. Work or no work, they're just 74% report that they're distracted. 36% of these the millennial age group and the Gen Z population say that they spend 2 hours or more per work day looking at their phones, conducting, you know, for personal activities. And just a little sidebar is when a person, and we've known this for years through social science research, that when a person gets distracted and off task, say, okay, you check your phone at work, it literally takes 23 minutes for the brain to get back on track and get refocused. So this is an alarming statistic that I'm going to throw out here and those that are business owners and have employees, it's going to really pique your interest, because companies spend around 75%, according to statistics, they spend about 75% of a worker's annual salary to cover lost productivity. So in other words, that employee that you have that is living in this chronic state 3/4 of the time of lost productivity, you're getting about 1/4 of your return on your investment. Now, that's crazy. If you compare And I don't know of any studies that were done, but let's say there had been studies done, say 40 years ago, 30 years ago, even 25 years ago, even before the advent of just these powerful pieces of technology. And they're great, by the way. I'm not saying they're bad things. I'm just saying they, we need to be aware of these things so that we can temper their use. If we could rewind the clock and do these studies there, I don't think you would find people being as distractible. I don't think you would find people being as low productivity, having as much low productivity as they do now. I will tell you this, from having worked in addiction medicine for years and having done inpatient work for years in addiction medicine, one of the worst things that we see is that when a person is jonesing, and that's a street slang, they're jonesing for that particular drug, their attention, their concentration, their focus, their critical thinking ability, their distractibility is off the charts everywhere. They're scattered. They're scatterbrained. You've heard that term, scatterbrained. They're kind of scatterbrained. And the reason is because they are having what we call a letdown syndrome. They're not exposed to that chemical that they were being exposed to that was stimulating that dopamine. And when you have a sudden withdrawal of dopamine, you go into dysphoria. The technical term is anhedonia. Anhedonia just means that you can't experience any emotion. You can't experience joy. You're flat. You just don't have much expression in your life. So I say all these things to say this, we need to be really extra careful, you know, what we're exposing ourselves to, how we're exposing ourselves, and how we're exposing ourselves in order to bring about healing. You know, I think at the most rudimentary level, people want to be more productive. They want to go out and be social. They want to commit to a healthy eating and exercise. But we know from research that when people are mentally fatigued, when they're stretched too thin, when they're fried, so to speak, if you want to use that term, research shows us that they struggle in all these areas. They're less productive, they're less social, and they're less committed to healthy routines. So I think there's some questions that we need to ask ourselves. First of all, is how do you define a healthy brain? Well, I mean, it's a great question. How do you define a healthy brain? For some people, a healthy brain may be, I can think clearly, I can focus well. For others, it may be, you know, I'm taking the right nutritional supplementation. I was reading a study right before I jumped on the show, and it was talking about the deleterious effects of eating processed foods and how it increases inflammation in the brain. And the study actually looked at taking the omega-3 DHA as a way to combat that inflammation. I didn't want to talk about that study because I think it gives people legal ease to go out and eat whatever they want and then take DHEA to combat the inflammation, which is not the answer, by the way. But that's kind of what that study was saying, is like, you can eat crap food, have all this inflammation, but you can combat the inflammation with DHA. I don't agree with that. I think you need to take the DHA to combat the inflammation, period. And then you need to eat really clean and green so that you don't have those inflammatory states, because we know that there's an additive effect with DHA. In fact, if I've never explained this before, and I don't think I've explained this on the show, in the Icelandic longevity study, specifically with DHA, your cells in your body, every cell in your body is made up of alternating molecules of fat and water. Okay. They're just interlinked molecules of fat and water that make this sphere. Now, the American diet, according to the Icelandic longevity study, which was done back in the early 90s, and it's worse now because our consumption of omega-6 fats is through the roof in the Western world. And what they found is that the ratio of omega-6 to omega-3 in the Western diet was about 40 to 1. And that was back then in the early 90s. I think it's closer to 60 to 1 now, just conservatively based on some math that I've done, just based on how much more processed foods we have available to us in supermarkets. So goal number one, don't eat processed foods. You need to be preparing your own food because they're super, super high in omega-6s, which is not good for you. You need a little bit. You don't need a lot. But Icelandic longevity study looked at the number of centenarians. Those are people who live to be over 100. And what they found was, is this beautiful ratio of omega-3s to omega-6s that was in the 6-to-1 range. So 6-part omega-3 to 1-part omega-6. And then you look at the American diet or the Western diet, and it's more like 40 parts omega-6 to 1 part. I would venture guess 0 parts omega-3. So it's hardly any, it's no comparison at all. And it's horribly lopsided. But what scientists found was when they looked at the cell structure under an electron microscope, knowing physiologically that a cell is made up of alternating molecules of fat and water, what they found was is the cell of this non-centenarian population that had this high omega-6 structure or high omega-6s in their diet, they found that the structure of their cell, because your body's going to use whatever fat it has available, and it will use an omega-6 in order to create that cell if that's the only thing it has. But when it uses omega-6s to create a cell, the cell is very rigid. It's like hitting on this desk, right, in this wooden desk. And it's very rigid, so it can't allow nutrients in, and it can't allow waste to be excreted out. So you end up with this dirty looking, under electron microscope, the cells look more cloudy, they look more dirty, they're smaller, they're not as plump as the cells that are made with omega-3s. But when you have these omega-3 rich cells that are made up of alternating molecules of omega-3 and water, they're very supple, they're very pliable, they're very plump, they're very clear, they're crystal clear, they're getting waste out, they're getting nutrients in. And they believe that that was one of the hallmark characteristics for the centenarian populations. They live to be older in age, they live to be healthier because they take better care of themselves at the cellular level. So how do you define a healthy brain? You know, I think a healthy brain is defined by one that's not inflamed, one that detoxifies well, and one that is made up of a cell structure that is, for the most part, mostly omega-3 versus omega-6. Another question that we need to ask ourselves is, do our devices lead to hyperstimulation syndromes? And we've already talked about that, but I think we need to self-monitor our screen time. We need to be really, really careful about what we are exposing our brains to. It's all part of having that healthy brain. It's all part of having a healthy body. I think the next question we need to ask is, what everyday stress are we exposing ourselves to that we don't need to be exposing ourselves to? You know, I tell my clients all the time, control what you can control and don't worry about the rest. And there are things that you can control. Like, you can control the food that you put in your mouth, the water that you drink, the amount of sleep that you get, the exercise that you get. Those are things that you can control. And there are things that, like, all this chaos that's going on in the world, that's beyond our control. We can't control that stuff. So, I mean, if you're one of those people that's an avid news watcher, I encourage you to stop watching the news. I encourage you to stop reading the news. Don't fall into that negative stuff. You can control that. Those are the things that you should control. Is it normal to be so tired all the time? That's another question that I get. No, it's not normal to be so tired all the time. You really need to take a look at what you're doing. What does your sleep routine look like at night before, as you're getting ready to go to bed, within 2 hours of your bedtime? Because that's leading to proper brain health. That's leading to disinflaming your brain. You want to cause brain inflammation? Don't get enough sleep. You want to cause brain inflammation? Don't get enough deep sleep. All of these things come into play to your mental health, your emotional health, your physical health. And those are things that we need to be paying attention to. So I know there are people, I talk to people all the time about, you know, with questions like, well, what can I do to help out with this? What can I do to make sure that my brain's on point? What can I do to help with longevity? And I'm not saying the things that I do lead to or make you have a longer life, But what I am saying is because I don't believe in anti-aging. I'll just throw that out there right now. I don't believe there's any such thing. I believe somebody that sells anti-aging, you need to run for the hills because they're selling snake oil. Okay. I don't believe there's a fountain of youth. What I do believe in, I do believe there's quality of life. And I believe that the quality of time that we have, the functional time that we have on this planet, can be right up until the day that you die. And that's the goal, to be functional, go, up until the day that you die. That was my dad. You know, he passed away, you know, last week. And that man was going, and he was constantly going. Yes, he died at a young age. Again, I do think that was a medication issue. In fact, I've got good evidence for that. But anyway, you know, he was functional. I look at my wife's grandmother lived to be almost 101 years of age, and she died a few days short of her 100th birthday. She had recently quit driving. And she slipped and fell on ice and broke her hip. And she was that did it. And, you know, so how long can we be functional? How long can we go? That's the goal of longevity medicine, not to make us live to be 120. Yeah, some people will. Some people will naturally do that. And you listen to some of the gurus out there that say, yeah, that's the goal of longevity medicine because the body was meant to live to be 120 years of age. You know, yeah, I agree. But at the time that humans lived to be in that age range, they weren't exposed to the toxins that we're exposed to now. I mean, there are things in our air and things in our water that, again, we can't control necessarily. Yeah, you could put filtration systems on your water supply, on your water lines, and that helps. You can put air filtration systems in your home, but what are you going to do when you go outside? I mean, are you going to wear a respirator all the time? No, you're not going to wear a respirator all the time to filter the air that you're breathing outside. It's just not realistic. And so control the things that you can control. But I firmly believe if you want to lay the foundation for good, proper brain health, good body health, good potential longevity health, and staying functional as long as you can for the rest of your life, you need to start with your genetics. You can roadmap, you can develop a blueprint, a roadmap for where you are, how your body is set up. Genetics are like switches. Some of them are cut on, you know, that are bad, and some of them are good that are cut off. And we can identify which ones of those bad switches are cut on and which one of those good switches are cut off. And then we can come in and nutritionally support and lifestyle support those genes to get them flipped in the right direction. And that's the goal. That's what I do through the Gene Hack Bootcamp. So if you're curious about that, have any questions about what the Gene Hack Bootcamp would look like, what the Gene Hack Accelerator would look like, message me on Instagram or Facebook. I'd be glad to talk to you about it, answer any questions that you have. You can direct message me at Dr. Brian G. Brown on Facebook or Instagram. So tune in next Tuesday at noon Eastern Standard Time for, did I say Tuesday? I said Tuesday. Man, my brain is whew. Next Thursday at noon Eastern Standard Time for our next In the Zone segment, you know, where I'll be sharing the latest research and my insights about that research as it relates to optimizing your physical, emotional, and wellness journey. Most informed, most trusted, and most grateful that you spent this time with us today. Until next time, stay in the zone. I'm Dr. Brian Brown.